This episode of The Blotter Presents is brought to you in part by Scott J. Thanks again for your support, Scott. And you can join the ranks of Blotter tipsters at patreon.com/blotterpresents. And now, on with the podcast.
If this story were a made-for-TV movie, and it surely will be, you might not believe it.
I don't know why ID decided to take another look at the Pamela Smart case now, or frankly why it's classified as one of their American murder mysteries when there's just not much mystery surrounding a woman manipulating her teen lover into offing her husband. They don't get much more American than this case though, and Eve Beatty's back to help me unpack the idea that this sordid New Hampshire love triangle invented reality TV. Or at least that's the contention of Captivated, the Trials of Pamela Smart. Better disinfect the entire media center. It's The Blotter Presents, episode 65. Welcome back to The Blotter Presents. I'm your host, Sarah D. Bunting, and I, too, was guilty of misdemeanor stretched-out spiral perm at the time these events took place, but in my defense, I am from New Jersey. I am thrilled to be joined once again by Eve Beatty. Hi, Eve.
Hey there. I was arrested for, I think, felony body wave, but I had a really good defense attorney and got out of it.
Oh, yeah. The body wave. I also had that, and it didn't make a difference. It's like, oh, it's less of a commitment than a perm. No, you still got to grow that biatch out at the end of the day.
I mean, this is not the perm podcast, but I just will say that I think the body wave, the scam is that it fries your hair, so your hair is super frizzy, and so they can be like, look, now it has a body.
Yeah, and wave goodbye to your sex life. Yes, it's sort of ironic in that context for us to call the next section the most wanted. But that's how we do it. We are doing two Pamela Smart properties today. And since the first is the most recent, let's begin with that. Pamela Smart, an American murder mystery, which is, I think, has wrapped up its three nights of programming by the time you listeners are hearing this. It dropped the 18th on Investigation Discovery, and I'm sure it is available on their website. We will have a link in the show notes. This case sort of like went right past me when it actually happened. There's pretty much no way anyone really needs a refresher. Even if you think you don't know the case, you probably do. But before we get into this property, here is the case file. On May 1st, 1990, Pam Smart came home to find her Derry, New Hampshire condo ransacked and her husband Greg dead on the floor. It took local investigators a while and required the help of anonymous tips, a co-defendant's father turning in a gun, and Smart's intern wearing a wire, but eventually they found their ass with both hands and figured out that Smart had leveraged her affair with teenager Billy Flynn into a murder-for-sex-slash-hire situation. And charged Smart with murder. She was convicted and sentenced to life, no parole, though she continues to claim that Flynn and his hench boys acted of their own volition and that she's a victim of sexism and the Heisenberg principle? I'm not convinced both those things can't be true at the same time, or that we needed another Smart case property when literally every Law & Order iteration, including the video games, has run the case at least once or twice, but let us take a look at the most recent Pamela Smart, an American murder mystery. Were you, Eve, familiar with this case contemporaneously, or were you, like me, sort of absorbing it later on from adaptations like To Die For, various Law and Orders?
That's exactly,
yeah.
That's exactly it, Sarah. I think that when I saw To Die For, which I think came out by then, I was either in college or had dropped out, but was hanging out with, like, you know, sort of a college coterie that, you know, like people are like, oh, you know what, it's this true crime case. But back then, I mean, I think that, you know, youngsters, you all have to remember that even though this might have been like broadcast on local TV or made it on the evening news, there wasn't this sort of other way to access all of this stuff anytime you felt like it. So if you didn't catch the evening news, which why would I if I was in my 20s, you know, I just don't think I would have heard about it.
Yeah, I was busy being a senior in high school, not too much older than Billy Flynn and not too much younger than Pamela Smart, actually. And I just, you know, didn't pay any attention to it. But there is something about this story, and particularly the fact that it's the grown woman, teenage boy, that the there's something that the culture just can't. It's like a bone in the throat of the culture. Wow, that was horrible phrasing, but you know what I mean. It just sort of get, let's try poppy seed at the gum line instead. That's a little less disgusting.
Well, you know, as we record this, there's a headline about, you know, Asia Argento, who now it looks like the result of this sort of settlement had a relationship with a teenage boy or relationship. It looks like, according to the lawsuit, it was non-consensual. I apologize for saying relationship. Had a non-consensual sexual encounter, non-consensual on his part with a teenage boy. And the headlines are just breaking this morning. But, you know, I was so reminded of this case when I saw this, that the people, the news cycle getting their teeth into the Asia Argento case is going to be so similar to this in so many ways, I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's just something about the fact that a male teacher having a, quote, relationship, it's not a relationship if they're not old right. enough to consent, but with a teenage girl, is considered sort of par for the course, gross, whereas the reverse is, I think, more titillating on some level and not... Mm-hmm. I think there's a tendency to, like call the kid lucky, or like, oh well, teenage boys, they, like, he must be thrilled, which is like, well, that's not the point, at all. You called for our first clip from this property. Let's hear clip two. It's a short one.
A bombshell revelation shatters the case.
Well, see, okay. So this, if, you know, taking the matters of the case aside, when I heard this line, I had this sort of epiphany. The time for this kind of true crime show is over. If you had just told me, oh, this was like a true crime show that was made, you know, a year or two after the case, I would have believed you, because it's this same sort of bullshitty true crime, you know, the sort of insinuating voiceover, the, you know, you could also hear that sort of Inside Edition-y music in the background. I mean, my understanding is that Investigation Discovery is trying to be smarter and trying to appeal to sort of a demographic besides, you know, people who don't have jobs. I say this as someone who watches Investigation Discovery during the day, but you guys, I do have a job. And so it feels so incredibly dated to me now, Sarah. Like, it just feels like a relic, and it doesn't cost more money to be smarter, and I also don't think it will cost you your audience. See The Jinx, see The Staircase, see freaking American Vandal, you know, see everything else. Anyway, that's my gripe with this show overall. So this is where we're going to be going today, you guys. Sorry.
Yeah, that's so interesting that you say that. Like, for Investigation Discovery, this, you know, in the sort of long arc of their history as a network, the American Murder Mystery franchise is relatively restrained and well made. I think it has a lot of National Enquirer Presents DNA in it, which, whatever you think of that. Diane Diamond is always in it, whatever you think of her. But that's such an interesting way to put it, that the time for this has gone, because I think that's absolutely right. And I think we're also in a period of, you know, peak TV. It's usually like, oh, well, which sort of like B plus scripted show am I going to get rid of because there aren't enough hours in the day? Or which Real Housewives program do I have to give up? But it's like, you know, there's a lot of true crime too. And now that as a genre, it's not as stigmatized as it was, this kind of by numbers tabloidy property is on borrowed time. So,
well, yeah, because true crime has been so mainstreamed, and I think we can, you know, in large part credit Serial, and, you know, I don't know, I think we can credit Serial for a lot of that. And Serial definitely has its quirks and, you know, is problematic for a whole other host of reasons. But I think sort of that, you know, combination of Serial and The Jinx and these other things that I mentioned earlier, all sort of coming out around the same time, meant that everybody is interested in true crime right now. This is such a huge opportunity for investigation discovery. So it's disappointing to me that they're falling back on, you know, something that was seriously tired at the turn of the millennium.
Yeah. And they do have some limited series that they've done that were like that. The one about the women who vanished in Ohio from Joe right. Berlinger, that was quite well mm-hmm. done. It wasn't the most you know, edge of your seat programming ever, but it was not this. And the other thing is, like, Oxygen is kind of eating their lunch with, like, the sort of winky, trashy stuff right now. So I kind of feel like they need to, like, tack at another angle that is not this. But
right.
this was, I mean, it was fairly informative. Like, if you want to get mm-hmm. up to speed on the case without, I mean, it has definitely a different perspective on her guilt, I would say. I haven't watched the whole thing, but I think it sort of assumes that she was involved somehow. But it's not quite as, well, I would say it's not quite as pro-law enforcement as these programs, like programs of this ilk, tend to be. But maybe it's just that this guy, Detective Pelletier, who admits in the property we're going to talk about next that he's been on like 15 of these shows, his inability to like get out of his own self-aggrandizing, inexperienced way is pretty funny. Like, you've been on every one of these news mags. You still haven't learned not to admit that you that you were overmatched yeah. by a homicide. Here's clip three.
Derry, New Hampshire is a small bedroom community. The crime rate wasn't very high. We hadn't worked a homicide case that year, maybe for the year before too.
At which point I yelled, "So what do you do all day?"
Yeah. What do they do all day?
Right? That must be nice.
Yeah. Just waiting for the phone to ring, watching Investigation yeah. Discovery, probably. What Pam did all day, this was not a young teacher, the subject of schoolboy fantasy thing necessarily. She was the like media arts instructor at this high school. And she also ran this Project Self-Esteem group, which is how she met both the notorious Cecilia, who wore the wire, and was her intern. Although I think they just were friends and Pam bought her beer. And that's how she also met William Flynn and his friends. But there was a snippet that I clipped that suggested that things could have gone a very different way for Pamela. And I kind of want to live in the timeline where she is a what was the name of the metal video show on MTV?
Headbangers Ball.
Yes. If she had been like the, you know, Lita Ford version yeah. of that, here's clip four.
Pam was the DJ on the school's radio station. She was the maiden of metal. She ruled the airwaves playing heavy metal music.
The maiden of metal. Yes, I did. I did a show. I did a regular show on the radio, but then I also did a heavy metal show. I was a big Van Halen fan at the time and named my dog after Van Halen. The dog's name was Halen.
We'll hear more from Halen a little and his, you know, exposure to potential trauma a little later. Yeah, I just couldn't help thinking. I was also thinking about the characterization of Pamela Smart by Bill James in his book Popular Crime, where he said that she was sort of a study in contrasts, that she was like very driven, but also very immature. And that she's sort of one of those, like whenever people are talking about, like, most sociopaths don't turn into killers. Like, I think this is probably a narcissist who found herself in a situation that, if she were like in a job, like she's a DJ, she's an actor, something where she's like getting more positive attention that's not reliant on children / her troubled marriage. Like, I think that things might have turned out differently for her if she had been able to funnel that project management drive into something that was not killing her husband. So it was interesting to think about that.
Well, and also she was, I'm not going to defend this woman assuming that she is actually guilty, which I think there's still like sort of reasonable questions that can be posed here, but she was 21 when she was admittedly, you know, hooking up with this high school student, and people who are 21 are all narcissists. It's very rare that you find a 21-year-old in sort of American society who really has their shit together.
Yeah, certainly I would not make that list. Yeah, so that I found that interesting. But as usual with an investigation discovery project, the insights tend to be accidental. I'm not sure that's what they intended. And certainly they're, I think, more interested in... first of all, like, kind of dragging it out so that it will fill up three nights. And second of all, sticking to a much more traditional narrative, particularly about, quote, a woman like that, unquote. So while that was sort of fun to think about, like, what if she were like a drive time radio star now? And maybe she is in the joint. I don't, it doesn't sound like that's the case. But speaking of filler
joints
and joints, yeah, you called for this next clip. Why did you want to point up this note?
Because even in whatever 1990, I thought that the presence of marijuana is indicative of someone being a drug dealer, that this is just another sort of thing that made me think this cop is either terrible at his job or just sort of presenting bullshit when he's being interviewed.
We noticed that there was a marijuana cigarette that was left inside Greg's truck. We were thinking that perhaps he's involved in some kind of a drug dealing, and that it was a drug deal gone bad.
Oh my God, I forgot that he also said marijuana cigarette, which is something I only say when, like, I'm being, like, like sort of a deliberate asshole, like, to my husband or to younger people or something. Well, I don't know. I mean, you just see these people out there with their marijuana cigarettes. I mean, it just, like, is this the thin man?
I know. Is marijuana spelled with an H? I mean, yeah, Pelletier. And here's the other thing. Like, I feel like most drug dealers of even basic competence bust their stations. Like, the last person who's going to have a marijuana cigarette just lying around the truck is a guy who's moving enough product for to be considered a dealer versus a consumer. But maybe I've been watching too much TV my own self. That just sounded like, why do they always go to that answer? That's almost never the answer. Oh,
I mean, yeah, it was a joint in with a guy who listened to heavy metal and had a mullet. I mean, come on, in 1990. Come on, guys. come on, are you serious? Are you? I mean, it just seemed ludicrous. And okay, I will tell you what it felt like to me. Now I remember my emotions at the time. It felt like to me that he was trying to convince us that he had looked at other suspects or considered other things before he sort of got to this, before the answer in this case was handed to him.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. The other sort of noteworthy part of the American murder mystery take on the case is this newscaster who kind of became part of the story slash drove the story, like, literally in his car on a daily basis to try to bring his lesser known local TV station and himself into the national spotlight. And we really have to get more into this when we're talking about the Captivated documentary, because you can't see the contrast until you've watched them both. But here is this newscaster, Bill. What is his last name? Bill Johnson? Bill Simmons? It's not Bill Simmons.
Bill, it's Bill something. Oh, God. Why can't I remember now? It's Bill something, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Hold on. I'm going to check my notes. And while I'm doing that, let's hear clip six.
I can't comment, Bill. I really can't. Well, I'm totally devastated by this. I can't comment.
That phrase, devastated, I'm really devastated by this, that's stuck in my mind. Well, why in the hell would you be devastated? They just made an arrest in the murder of your husband, and now there's a solution. Fantastic. Why would you be devastated by that? I didn't understand. I didn't understand at that point.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, come on. Why wouldn't she be devastated? Because if the arrest, you know, the arrest was, like, the guy you were banging, I would also be devastated.
Well, and yeah, he didn't understand at that point. Okay,
yeah.
But like, your husband was killed, and even if you had nothing to do with it, the fact that it's like teens that you interacted with and taught at school.
Right.
Like, that's fairly devastating to be like, well, what was this for? For a robbery where they didn't even take anything. I mean, if you buy her story, which I don't, but yeah. Bill Spencer is his name. Sorry.
Thank you.
Bill Spencer, he's on just as many of these as Pelletier is. And he, I don't know, like I don't blame him for understanding that, you know, news is his business and business was great for him. That's fine. Like, this is now his lane and that's fine. But this is sort of the problem that we were talking about with these types of shows, that it's like just very predictable, and he sounds rehearsed and a little glib. And I'm not saying that you have to get like all new talking heads for everything ever, but especially after you watch Captivated and you hear from him in that documentary, and that documentary tries to indict him and everything else for Pamela Smart's conviction, it's a lot to take. But I think your initial point was pretty much everything we need to say about this iteration of the Pamela Smart story.
Well, I say this not having watched the third episode, which, you know, was promoted at the end of the second episode screener as, you know, next up we have the exclusive interview with Pamela Smart. And I have to say, I was sort of like, well, yeah, I could handle an hour, like, listening to this woman talk, because the thing is, she is interesting. I am wondering how she gets such nice blonde hair dye in jail. I'm curious about that. I, you know, am interested in seeing how rehearsed she is or not. Or, I mean, I think it's, like, listen, here's my theory on the case. My theory on the case is it's the total, like, Archbishop of Canterbury thing, right? Like, if anyone who's, like, read or seen T.S. Eliot's Murder in the Cathedral, oh, my God, shut up, Eve. Anyway, you know how there's, like, that line where like the king says, won't someone rid me of this meddlesome priest? And that's when all his knights go out and they slaughter the Archbishop of Canterbury, and that's how it goes. But that's what I think of any time I see something like this. I am sure that she said something like, oh my God, you know, we could totally be together, like if my husband was dead. Or, you know, I say stuff like this all the time about my husband. Yeah, when Tim dies and I get the life insurance money, I say this shit. It doesn't mean I'm trying to convince some kid with a mullet. I'm not banging a high teenager with a mullet, also, to kill anyone. But you say dumb, glib things, especially when you're a frustrated, unhappy 21-year-old who probably imagined that you were going to sort of own the earth, and you ended up working in some junkie high school in your hometown.
Yeah. Well, look, I got engaged based on glib tossed off comments like that.
Yeah.
Because it was like, okay, well, you know, when we're married, if you want a divorce, just get a divorce. Don't kill me.
Oh, yeah.
Take whatever you want. And Dan's like, when we get married, and then the rest, as they say, is history. But we still have conversations like this. So we'll be watching some like 48 hours where it's yet another like, you know, couple goes for a hike. One of them comes back. Like, do you know how many women are at the bottoms of ravines in the great American West? Spoiler, a lot.
Sarah, you know I'm going to the Grand Canyon with Tim tomorrow, right? No, for real, I am. This is great timing. Thanks, guys. Okay, blotter listeners, you heard it here first. If I don't come back from this trip, it's Tim. It was Tim. Don't let him get the insurance money.
All right, so here's the deal. Listeners, let's all continue to do like Twitter wellness checks on Eve.
Yep.
For the next week, and make sure she comes back in one piece. But Eve, please wear a helmet. But yeah, we're always just like, you know, one of these days I'm going to go out for my hashtag old lady walk and I'm just not going to come home. Dad's like, you know, making a big show of making notes. Like, is this going to happen? No. But if it did happen, Dan's fucked, because we have had these conversations many times and now it's on the record in a podcast. So, yeah, honey, don't do it. The insurance is not worth it.
Nope.
All right. Well, yeah. We'd love to hear from you if you watched the whole thing, about whether there were any insights in the interview and whether we should maybe take Pam Smart's allegations more seriously, that she was like, well, yeah, I had an inappropriate affair with the kid, but I didn't tell him to kill my husband. And either way, we'd love to hear your theories. Social media at Blotter Presents on Twitter and Facebook. Now let's get into our cold case. This is Captivated, the Trials of Pamela Smart, which aired on HBO in 2014, I believe, but is not on HBO Go, which is annoying. It is on Amazon. You have to rent it, which is annoying. But Eve noted that you can get it. Is Canopy an app? Is a public library app?
Canopy is, you can get it an app on your device, but you can also just go straight through your computer. You know, just like remember how we used to watch Netflix, like on a computer, like an animal? You can do it that way too. So what it is this company Canopy makes deals with local public libraries. So you just go and you look and you see if your public library is one of the users. And if it isn't, this is a great time for you to encourage your public library to get a relationship with them, because it doesn't cost them anything and it's good for us. So Canopy is how I watched it, because I was too lazy to spend the $3 or whatever.
I spent the $3 and wrote it off. But we'll throw you some links in the show notes to see if we can't find a way for you to watch it free, but legally. Same case file as before. But the director of Captivated, where is this name? Why am I so disorganized today?
I'm glad you're looking. I meant to look that up.
I could have sworn I wrote it down. I don't know what my problem is. No, I can't find it. That will also be in the show notes. I think his name is Jeremiah. This is his only feature as a director. And
really?
It's, yeah, I remember that because I looked that up. I liked this I liked the structuring of this. I thought it was well made. But as it went on, I found myself more and more uncomfortable with what I felt it was trying to make me also think about Pamela Smart.
You're over and under on if they tried to get the rights to use the song Dirty Laundry, which I believe appeared in To Die For. I mean, obviously, somebody made a call and said, oh, we need to get Dirty Laundry to play at some point, maybe over the credits or something like that.
Right. And wait, it didn't?
No.
Huh.
Well, I think it didn't To Die For, but it never appeared in this, you know, in this documentary. But didn't you feel like it should have? But the song that you did hear the whole time, I was curious enough to Shazam it.
Uh-huh.
You keep hearing this music. It's a song by Zoe Keating. It is called Escape Artist. I listened to the whole thing. If you look on Twitter at Eve B, I believe my most recent tweet, you know, the ones that aren't complaining about customer service, is I turned it on my Alexa and I shot my dog doing a crime. And so I think that you'll find it to be very effective.
It was.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to the season of In the Dark devoted to Govey's trial.
He fucking stole a bagel this morning. So believe me, there is a sequel on the works.
Oh, I can't wait. So basically Captivated gives you a decent case overview, and if you're only going to pick one of these to watch, I would watch Captivated. It's better made. It's less, you know, by numbers and cheesy, and it's shorter. But it fires a warning shot very quickly about sort of what, like a shot crosses the bow about what its sort of grand unifying theory of this case is and what it says about us as a society. Clip 7.
10 years prior to Survivor, a few years prior to The Real World. So no one had ever seen a television show where you watched real life play out in real time.
There's no soap opera to this. It's real stuff.
Nothing happens, and it's totally fascinating.
Litigation as entertainment was just exploding, and it exploded through this trial.
Litigation as entertainment. Excellent way to put it. And I did have to sort of check my timelines on this because I very smugly was like, hello, Menendez case, in my notes, not recalling that the Menendez murders occurred before these, but did not go to trial until after this. So.
Well, and the same with OJ, right? I mean, that was two, 3 years after this. So, because if someone said to me, what's the first trial that you remember being televised? I would probably say OJ.
Right. I would have said Menendez, but that was like I don't know why. Probably because I was at Princeton and Menendez had been there and was kicked out for cheating. Good job, dude.
But I'd also like to, I mean, I have some beef with this assertion of, you know, litigation is entertainment and now this is this shocking sort of, you know, thing of the modern age. Were this the case, The Crucible would not be a play. Were this the case, people would not have packed courtrooms for trials since, you know, recorded history began writing about trials. Were this the case, the town square would not be filled so people could mock folks in stocks or being hanged. So this is sort of, I feel, a bullshitty sort of, oh, problems with the modern world thing when people have always been this way. It just used to not be on a screen in your house. You used to have to get up and get dressed and go there.
Yeah, and I wish they had made that distinction because, you know, Lindbergh trial. Mary,
Great example.
Mary, the cigar store girl in like turn of the 19th century New York.
The line around the block for the Rosenbergs.
Yeah, exactly. There's a million examples of this in a million communities around the world. I think that this is a psychosocial human community thing and not a TV thing, but I think there are distinctions and nuances that I wish they just said, like, well, how did TV and how did it coming into our homes affect how we received this trial and this case? They also talk a little bit, but I don't think push hard enough on the idea of this like archetype of the like the various not fallen women, but like the Black Widow, the seductress, that, you know, Mrs. Robinson archetype, if you want to go in that direction, which, you know,
the Ice Queen.
Ben was an adult, so I don't particularly want to drag the graduate into this, but I don't think they go as hard at that as they could. And they're definitely content to ask Bill Spencer what he thinks about her possible involvement based on his interactions with her as an interviewer. In the clip we're about to hear, there is a lot of shade. The first part is his VO of a contemporary news story in which he's managing to side-eye her grief responses. And the second part is, the second part is self-explanatory. Here is clip 8.
It is now 7 days since the murder. This would have been their one-year wedding anniversary, she tells me. Throughout the lengthy interview, Pamela is composed.
Sometimes I ask myself, I can't figure out where the strength is coming from.
As we sit talking, Pamela's dog, Halen, named after the rock group Van Halen, snuggles up to her. Luckily, nothing happened to him, she says. He was locked in the basement when I found Greg murdered.
She's dressed beautifully, full-on makeup. She looks hot, you know, like she was going to a party. She told me that she had wanted to be a television news reporter. She wanted to do what I did. And she says, you know, it's been just about 1 year exactly since Greg and I were married. I've got the top layer of our wedding cake. Wouldn't it be good if you got a shot of me, like, looking at it? Wouldn't that be a poignant moment in your story? I'm like, what? She's attempting to produce the story that I'm working on.
I think he's more annoyed by the fact that she's trying to produce him than he is, like, shocked. And I don't know, like, how many times have we heard, like, well, she just didn't have much affect. Well, okay, I don't count that anymore, honestly. Some people don't. Or, like, you know, she's on TV, she's trying to hold it together. Or she doesn't like crying in front of people, as I also do not. Or she's not wrong. That would have been a poignant shot, a little on the nose. But it's weird the shit that you think about when you're in shock or grieving. Like, it's weird the shit that you fixate on. I don't know. I'm not saying she didn't do it. She did something. But that he's managing across several decades to get in that much shade about her composure, her attire, her production values is kind of amazing. And I would kind of like him to shut up.
Or that she was around what is arguably considered a celebrity, and she's a little bit starstruck, and she's, you know, just sort of trying to ingratiate herself. I'm not even saying that in a nasty way. I'm just saying, like, here's this sort of a big-time guy, you know, I want to seem helpful by making suggestions and being nice and saying pleasant things like, oh, I thought about doing that, you know? I feel like he's looking, you know, it's like one of those things, like, you know, when people talk about the kids who are survivors of school shootings, when, you know, they're speaking in the media and people say, I don't know, they're just too composed. I'm like, what do you want? They're trying to hold it together and they're trying to make change.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've always had a real issue with
Well,
that.
And I mean, didn't one of them like vomit at a rally? And
right.
Then I think she got shit for that too. It was like,
oh yeah, you can't win.
You really can't. But it's like, well, look, especially kids now are like, they all have YouTube channels, don't they? Isn't that what the kids have now? Like, they're used to this. I think they're like, I think everyone's a little better media trained generally, just like from birth now than they were when this all went down almost 30 years ago. Yikes. Yeah. Here's another snippet of Bill's insights into the boys who actually committed the crime. this is the kind of generalization that gave true crime a really bad name for decades on end. Here is clip 9.
And these boys are rough. Pete Randall, very tough looking. You can tell this kid is mean by looking at him. You know, he's got a hateful look in his eyes all of the time.
And
yeah.
Like the whole, like, I could see in his eyes. Like, that's not really a, that's not really a thing, actually. Like, you know, his eyes were just cold and, you know, that's not a thing. It's just not a thing. And I, even if it is a thing, it needs to be deleted from descriptions of criminals for a period of 10 years. Like, it's exhausted. But yeah, Pam Smart was not the only one who might have been designing her big moment on camera. Here's a good old Pelletier again, still not getting out of his own way in clip 10.
It's the shining moment for us. The line that came to mind on the way over was, the good news is we solved the murder of your husband, and the bad news is you're under arrest. Let me go back and just a little more emotion. I've got good news and I've got bad news. The good news is we've finally solved the murder of your husband. And the bad news is you're under arrest.
First take was better.
Well, and then it's later on in the documentary, we get clips of him delivering that same line in, you know, other true crime show after other true crime show. In fact, you know, like, if I hadn't known that the Investigation Discovery show was recent, I would have assumed that one of those clips would be from that too, because he delivers that same line again and again and again every time he's interviewed. You look at print interviews, he says the same line again. And then I said to her, same thing, New York Post. That's the line that he is attributed, you know, he attributes to himself.
I mean, I guess it's an okay line as these things go.
It's not that good.
No, it's not that good, but now he's stuck with it. But yeah, this is sort of the jumping off point for Captivated to explore the idea that, first of all, the Heisenberg principle, which you've sort of just seen in action or heard in action with Pelletier, that the high-profile nature of this case meant that everyone's behavior was affected, whether they intended it to be or meant it to be or not. And then the other plank in this platform is that Pamela Smart did not receive and could not have received a fair trial because the jury was not sequestered until deliberations, and it was not possible for them not to be absorbing just in the air and water the coverage of the case. And sort of as a subplank of that plank, that the coverage was by definition sexist, played into like sort of virago stereotypes about Pamela Smart. And this has been the basis of many of Smart's appeals. So I guess my question for you is, what did you, first of all, do you think that this is a valid position for Smart to take? And second of all, how did you feel about the documentary taking this position?
Well, I'm less psyched I am about the documentary. I think that the documentary gets weakest when it tells instead of shows. Like, when it lets Bill just talk, and when it, you know, shows like clips of Bill talking on whatever that was, Donahue or something, and talking, you know, and Pam's mom sort of calling him out. Like, I think that that's great, but when it starts like hitting me over the head with it, you know, a little bit more, I just think you've made your point. You don't need to try this hard, guys. But I think that, I think it's a completely valid sort of, I mean, I don't know. I believe in our court system, and I think that you should appeal on whatever grounds you can. And the thing is, I sort of, I had even assumed that she was an aspiring newscaster because I'd only seen To Die For. So I'm just as bad as jurors, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. There was a sort of framing device that they used by putting old TV footage from the time onto old TV sets and, you know, digitally, but then positioning those vintage TV sets like in a courtroom, on a sidewalk, in a newsroom. And it was like, it was pretty to look at. Like, it was an interesting like design that I think by the end really felt like it was twisting our arms to be like, you know, well, this is the influence of TV and look at this hall of mirrors that it's created about the truth. And it's like, well, but the thing is, the truth does that and humanity does that. I don't necessarily think it's TV. Should she have gotten a venue change? Probably. Should they have shipped her off to a correctional facility in New York where she remains? No. And was that to avoid questions about how her trial was handled? Probably. But then address those questions and don't, like, this isn't TV's fault. There are a lot of things that are TV's fault. This is not one of those things necessarily. I agree with you, though, that kind of letting certain talking head interviews just run on is where the documentary is strongest. And I think the next clip goes to that.
Thank you.
This is Ricky, who I believe was incarcerated at the same time or in the same, like, county holding facility.
Yeah, he was in county, yeah.
As the suspects. This is quite an oral history of the doings at the county jail, clip 11.
I caught him in the morning, him and Pete doing lines on a desk in a room. I caught him one morning, I opened up the door and they were banging lines before they were going to testify. And he goes, it makes me more emotional. He goes, it makes me more emotional on the stand. He said, don't you know this? Don't you notice? Don't you notice? Because I used to sit there and watch the boys. When they come back in, they would watch themselves on TV and I was with them. And we would all sit around, you know, we'd smoke a bone in the cell, a joint, a reefer, a weed, marijuana, whatever you want to call it. We were doing everything. We were doing especially marijuana, morphine, Valiums, and the cocaine, of course. I had one way where I threw a Nerf football, had someone throw a Nerf football over the fence, and inside the Nerf football would be the drugs. The funny thing was that there would be a different color Nerf football out there every day and the cops wouldn't even realize it. I could have got a gun in if I wanted to, but I'm not a gun person.
What this felt like to me is, you know how, like, at the end of Judd Apatow movies, they have sort of the other improvisational line readings for things where, like, Will Ferrell or Amy Poehler or Paul Rudd or someone is saying all, like, the other sort of possible things. Every, like, other term... A, why is it everyone around the Pamela Smart case can't just say, we were smoking weed? That's what everybody says, you guys. Everyone just says, we were smoking weed. We don't say all this, a bone, a marijuana, and also, right, smoking a weed. The only time I've ever heard anyone say that is on the Trixie and Katya show. Trixie says she smokes a weed. I thought that was delightful, so I was like, does she smoke it with Ricky? But, I mean, that whole thing, and then the Nerf football. I don't know. There's something about this whole story with the Nerf footballs and the, you know, kind of white trashy high school kids blowing rails in county and all that, that I just thought, yeah, Ricky, I don't know, you and your dye job, I got some questions.
Although there was a juror who made little audio tapes of herself at night to just sort of like keep track of the testimony and what she thought of it, which, like, the next time I am called for jury duty, they usually don't put me on criminal cases because I do have a misdemeanor conviction for smoking a weed. But should I ever make it back on a jury, I think I will do that, because it does all kind of start to run together, and that's a good way to sort of keep yourself focused. But she did not buy Billy Flynn's testimony at all, and she thought he was acting. And I thought that was an interesting juxtaposition with this. Do I think Ricky is being completely truthful and accurate in his recollections? No. Here's another thing that's interesting. He uses every single synonym for marijuana, but then blowing mm-hmm. rails, he just doesn't specify what that is. Like, yeah. Okay.
And we got everything. We got Valium. We got, what did he say? Did he say morphine? He didn't say heroin, which surprised me because it wasn't that hard to get heroin around there in 90. And, you know, it seems like snorting heroin would have been relaxing while you were in jail. But what do I know, you guys? I'm a 47-year-old woman. I haven't done drugs in years.
And hopefully you haven't been in jail, at least recently. So, yeah, this is all theoretical.
But now I know. Nerf footballs. It's the way to go, guys.
Yep. Just take a stroll out to the yard and someone with a perfect spiral can get mm-hmm. you whatever you need. Although I wouldn't even want drugs. I'd want like snacks.
Or I need my lady's multivitamin. Mm-hmm. So I need someone to throw that in, I think. That would be the big one.
Yeah. Or like make it a really bit like a Nerf basketball and put a kitten in there mm-hmm. so that I have someone
to
talk
to.
Yeah. Speaking of pets.
Yep.
Clip 12.
Who was Haley?
Pam's dog.
Did she and Bill ever discuss Haley?
She told Bill not to kill Greg in front of the dog because it would traumatize the dog.
Relatable.
See, I've been thinking about that a lot since then. Like, just in general. Like, is that really a thing? Like... Did you hear that? That's my dog being traumatized because I'm here talking about homicide.
Yes, it is a thing.
Now, I mean, there are so many things that just seem so local color and that it's hard for me, just as sort of a skeptical person, not to feel like a lot of shit here is fabricated, like the Nerf footballs, like this don't traumatize the dog stuff. But then again, we do know the dog was locked in the basement, so maybe I'm being a jerk here.
Well, and maybe I've just been around Brooklyn dog people too much, but that struck me as completely believable. Did not blink at that one. Cecilia does not strike me as super believable, and there was a short sequence devoted to the idea that perhaps this was her, you know, that she did enjoy the attention and being at the center of this story. And I'm not saying that she manipulated anything or necessarily made anything up, but it wasn't the most believable scenario. Pamela Smart's explanation for why she said the things she said was fairly compelling. Let me see if I can follow this like perm spiral of logic. But when it sounded like she was admitting things to Cecilia, it was actually because she wanted Cecilia to think that she'd done something so she could find out what Cecilia knew about the people who had actually done something. Was that the setup?
I guess. I mean, I don't know.
Like, I'm not asking if you believe it. Yeah. I'm asking if that sounds like an accurate representation of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, good. Like, if you know, if she is like a narcissist and a sociopath, this is the kind of lie that she would come up with to explain why she was saying what she was saying on the tapes. I mean, my understanding of sort of the wider case, and they don't necessarily get into this in Captivated because it's not convenient to their theory that TV stole Pamela Smart's life. Mm-hmm. You know, forgive the generalization, but I think it's not inaccurate. There is testimony from any number of people who overheard these conversations that there were repeated discussions about between her and Billy and the other two dudes who were there about killing Gregory Smart. So, yeah. But yeah, it's just as good of a story, I guess. And we saw it in To Die For, but it's not as, I think, high-minded of a story. And I think that's what Captivated is trying to do. Like, it's trying to take this American murder mystery level story and like up it to Jinx status, I guess. Mm-hmm. But this all occurred before either of those existed. So, yeah, mixed results. But in our final clip, there is a comment on something that you mentioned before about the system doing what it does. Here's our last clip.
The great injustice to me is that she's in jail forever, and the kids who actually perpetrated the crime will get out of jail. By sort of any measure, that's not fair. But that's, again, the way the system works. So the system did what the system does.
Her sentence is life without the possibility of parole. Even Charles Manson doesn't have that sentence.
And he was paroled below decks, as it were. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's unfair, but if the jury felt that she orchestrated this murder, that's murder in the first degree, and that's the sentence that you get is A. B, I believe that these guys, they did the 25 years, like they did the whole bid, which they had to do, but I mean, it's 25 years, like, yeah, they're out now. They're old. They're our age.
And despite like what was sort of suggested by, gosh, Sarah, now I can't remember if it was a defense attorney or what, you know, that, oh, when these guys get out, the truth is going to come out. The thing is, these guys have all gotten out. They have all been released. They did serve their time. And none of them are now saying, you know, I got to come clean and say that this was a decision that I made and Pam didn't have anything to do with it. None of them have said that. And that doesn't mean that that's not what happened. But, you know, I think that they don't have anything to lose by telling the truth. And they are now, you know, men in their mid to late 40s. And I do think that, like, you know, I'm not going to speak for you, Sarah, but I do think that it started to occur to me lately that I'm not going to get out of dying. And that I really do only have a limited amount of time left in my life. And I try to be more honest about stuff. Now, I've never murdered anybody, so who knows? But, you know, I feel like we're also to get into that stage in our lives where we're more actualized about stuff. There's no reason for them not to say so that they haven't. Leads me to believe that maybe justice was served.
Yeah. And these are not, like, Bill Spencer's fatuous commentary about the one guy's eyes notwithstanding. One of the guys who I think got less time, probably the driver, Latimy, there have been some ongoing struggles with the law that may have always been this person's destiny. And the fact is, for a lot of people, once you've been incarcerated, like getting out of that, you're like that ball in that sort of velodrome shaped toy for cats. Like once you're in that lane, you're not going to get popped out no matter what you do.
I'm just going to throw it out there. Maybe our correctional system doesn't rehabilitate people the way they claim they do.
Yeah. Maybe nothing's being corrected. And the whole side story about Pamela Smart, like the photos from the prison guard, and she's he raped me. I mean, that's a whole, like that, I believe, without question, that mm-hmm. that happened.
Yeah.
Come on, NY Doc, get your men and women in line, please, because that's fucked mm-hmm. up. I liked Captivated when I had seen it before when it first came out. I liked it then. I still like it now. I would recommend it, but I wish I'm a little frustrated by things it had potential to explore and didn't, and things that mm-hmm. it underlined that it didn't need to. There are some good tools here, some good starts here. It's a pleasant hour and a half. It's a well-built hour and a half, but it's like a B minus, I would say.
Yeah, there are just some amateur mistakes and just a slight lack of sophistication that keeps me from recommending it wholeheartedly. But still, if you ask me what's better made and with more quote-unquote purity of intention, I would say Captivated over the Investigation Discovery series. So given that I don't know that there's any new information, investigation, discovery. If someone said to me, if I were going to watch one of these things to hook up with Pam Smart, I would recommend Captivated. How about you?
Yeah, same. American Murder Mystery is what it is. I am not going to watch the third installment to find out if there's some groundbreaking revelation. But the other thing about that was like, why now? So, yeah. You know, given that she's probably not going to be strolling out the front door of Bedford Hills as the result of their airing it, I would try to track down Captivated and watch that instead. Speaking of tracking things down, you were talking about tracking down some vintage acid wash and oversized jean jackets as a result of marinating in this case over the weekend, and I feel like perhaps you have a retail establishment at which listeners might do the same. Where can people find you?
Wow, that was a really good segue, Sarah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, one of my better ones. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, that was solid. I always love seeing listeners come into my store. It's called Avenues Dry Goods. It's in San Francisco. We are in the Outer Sunset. You can find us on social media at Avenues Dry Goods, and that'll show you exactly where we are and when we're open. We've had some blotter listeners come in, and it is always a delight. So yeah, please do come by the next time you are in San Francisco.
Oh my gosh, I would love to have that moment commemorated on Instagram. And yeah, so listeners, yeah, definitely check it out if you are local. Speaking of things you should check out, not as good of a segue, but what can I say? Coming up on The Blotter Presents, Annabeth Chow returns to talk about Rest in Power, and permaguest Tomi Ball is finally back to talk about Oxygen's Unspeakable Crime. Until then, got a tip for The Blotter Presents? You can find me on social media. That's Blotter Presents on both Facebook and Twitter. You can email me at bunting@the-blotter.com or become an official Blotter tipster at The Blotter's Patreon page, patreon.com/blotter. Like the podcast? Tell a friend and rate it on iTunes. Don't like the podcast? Tell no one. My guest has been Eve Beatty, and she is on Twitter at Eve B. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I confidentially inform you that I hope you'll tune in next time.